Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cried the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
my freaky darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlinghetti, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Fridays are split between Crawling Into the Darkness with Pam and Break On Through. Saturday, join Aphasiana and Babbler as they teach you the fine arts of being part sinner, part saint. And Mondays are split between the Hearts of L&P with Victoria and a new chapter in the Black Lace Diaries with Mr. M and Mistress Frost. Now, these shows are designed so you can color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the audible to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, and my co-host, Pam Ray, and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Good evening, Pam.
Hey, Rex. How's it going?
All righty.
Awesome sauce. Glad to hear that. So, I see we got some towel tossing and some streaking and stuff going on in Late Night Poets. So, always a good time.
I think Gene just dropped in for a quickie and split.
So, great topic for tonight, Alfred Hitchcock quotes. Very cool. So, any fun facts that you know about Alfred Hitchcock?
Not off the top of my head, to initiate the use of a MacGuffin in the film industry.
What is that?
It's an angle that serves the plot. It's something that everybody wants, is looking for, or knows about, but no one ever sees it. No one ever finds it. It's just a little tease. Something that gets the plot going, and all of a sudden, it's rolling right through.
Okay. Huh. Cool. Man, I tell you, you just can't see a bunch of birds flying outside without thinking about Alfred Hitchcock. That's for sure.
Oh, he had all the famous blondes of the day walking around in his studios and on his lot, so he loved his blondes.
Yeah. Well, I know that was one of your quotes, the blondes make the best victims. So, but yeah, he was definitely something else, that's for sure. All right. But yeah, great quotes and looking forward to delving into the poetry and all that. So, we are going to start with a few carryovers and then go from there. And, all right, I'll go ahead and get the first poem up. And that is Lives of Our Days by Ted Markstein. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read for us, please.
Lives of Our Days by Ted Markstein. Crazies on the rant and rave, riding their demented wave, making such a hue and cry, just because to die. Time and space win every race, we disappear without a trace, deluded that it's by God's grace we're granted a better place. The plowman's servant to the plow, the tree is master to the bough. How's not to question why, but how, there is no when. There's only now. Obsequious, ubiquitous, the difference betwixt them and us. The ones who rule, they make the rules for all the other docile fools. Obsequity, iniquity, now rack the city, more's the pity, the velvet glove of God above, and action loathing deemed as love. The times have changed beyond belief. No call to arms brings us relief, or vision clouded minds unclear. No saviors now allay our fear. We spin and turn in frantic dance, choose rivalry o'er sweet romance, pursue our course through fear and hate with grim acceptance of our fate. the bitterness that never ends, no circumstances it amends, always grounds to steal the bust, cry injury, it's them or us. Beggars for our daily bread, stooped our steps, our eyes fixed down, uneasy lies flow from the head that wears the crown. Scream and shout and turn about, dreams will not prevail, bridges burning, no way out, gone, the holy grail. Turn about and shout and scream, there without God's grace go I, crying for the broken dream, only grayness greets the eye. Abased before the monster's might, nothing left to fear but fear. Days now night and blacks now white, hopes abandoned disappear. The bells announce our time to leave, none do listen, live or dead. Fate's no longer ours to weave, nothing more now to be said. Across the riven world we strode, in sunshine bright, oh how we glowed. We knew not when the darkness fell, what we had breached the mouth of hell. A thousand angels thundered by, their blackened wings destroyed the sky. Now all is lost that was before, for God is dead and comes no more. The storm clouds gathered overhead, the broken prayers in vain we said, fell on deaf ears and sank unheard, for none remained to heed the word. Then from this nightmare I awoke, the voice of ever to me spoke. This living death I now depart, to live within the open heart. End poem. Are you on mute?
No, I'm not. Sorry. I was just, yeah, great read there, Rex. Excellent right here. I like the title with the play on the soap opera, These Are the Days of Our Lives. So I thought that was quite clever. The plowman's servant to the plow, the tree's master to the bough. Ours is not to question why, but how. There's no when, there's only now. I think those are some great words of wisdom. Very cool there. And the times have changed beyond belief, no call to arms bring just relief, all visions clouded, minds unclear, no savior now allay our fear. Yeah, great lines and very well done.
And thank you very much. I would have thought the different play on the rhyming angle would be a little hard pressed, but it's not. It actually kind of works. From AABB to a full single rhyme, and then ABAB, and back and forth throughout the piece, which kind of set it up to actually flow pretty good and actually infer the depth of the thought that went into this, because this does hit on the note of, hey, what once we used to do is now gone to by way of thought. Too much crap has risen. We have gone over the edge and hit on that back end of being lost in the field, so to speak, because we have moved way past the thought of what we adhered to in the past, and now we strike a different angle, and those last four stanzas kind of hit on the note of we're in the midst of Armageddon, so to speak, on a level that we had not known before. Nicely done, Ted. Thank you. Well, what you got next?
All right. Great comment there, Rex. And up next, we have Heart's Avalanche by Betty Page, and it goes like this. Crushing pain bursting your silence of liberty, I just want to scream. My blood spills slowly, dripping as time ticks away. What could have been love? I die to kiss you, to touch you, to hold you close, yet I am your ghost, mirrors, reflections, waiting to be shattered. Just awaiting to shatter, razor-sharp hearts, glass, pounding with splinters, crystal invisible pins, love just do me in. I'm hiding my tears, pent up behind barbed wire, walls I've created, someone break them, please. I'm trapped, suffocate from pain, choking memories. I'm gasping to breathe. Circumstances consume me. I scream life caves in, tumbling, crushing pain, release dark avalanche, pools of crimson blood. I'm singing fiercely. Won't somebody ever love me before I'm to fade? End poem.
Great read, Pam. I had a different thought walking all the way through this until that end stanza. I'm singing fiercely, won't someone ever love me before I'm to fade? Because before that, it kind of hits on that notion of maybe losing somebody to death. I die to kiss you, to touch you, to hold you close, and I am your ghost. Mirror reflection slid in the shadow of sharp heart glass. Hits on that idea of, plus the barbed wire walls I've created, closing self off because of that broken angle. But that last stanza does put it in perspective as to where she went with this. Well done, Betty. How about you, Pam?
Great comment there, Rex.
One's a little longer, too.
Oh, what was that?
This one's a little longer, too.
It is. You're right. It is. You're right. She has the same, like, kind of a 5-7-5 type line, but has more stanzas to it, so that's cool. And, I like how she took the avalanche at a metaphorical level, the idea of life collapsing around you, you know, after, you know, your heart gets broken and, you know, you're suffering through the pain and choking on the memories. And, you know, there's just a real sense of loss and hurt. Within this right. So beautifully written, very well done.
Absolutely. All right, where are we off to next?
All right, up next we have Avalanche Within by Kay Heartless. And go ahead and give that a read for us, Rex.
Avalanche Within by Kay Heartless. You fell like flakes all winter, lightest touch, petting me, no heavy stuff. But as emotion flurries, accumulating need, an avalanche within, suffocating, a sudden rapid flow, frozen snow. Swollen feelings spontaneously unload, toyed with trauma, heartache, hypothermia, the blizzard, makes me old. Don't know if it's you or your angle of repose, the way you cinch the waist, corny slides, but there's an avalanche within me, heavy and cold and bone. All right, what you got, Pam?
I like this one. She shows the quote, sometimes I feel the need of an avalanche within me. And another great one that worked well. I really like how she took in the attributes of an avalanche or attributes of winter and used them as metaphors, you know, such as the flurries accumulating need was a clever line, as well as spontaneously unload, toyed with trauma, heartache, hypothermia. I thought putting hypothermia in there was a great word choice, and the idea that, you know, the heartache turns you cold. To me it spoke on the whole idea of love and hate or lust and hate, and it's beautifully written and very well done.
Nicely said. That opening stanza kind of hits on the tease of things, but nothing ever fully materializes. The flurries, accumulating need, and an avalanche within, suffocating, a sudden rapid flow of frozen snow. And there's an iciness in this that walks on the fact that she might be bursting with thought and feeling, yet the only angle is it's cold. It's not it's almost brotherly coming across, as in the way she's writ. The angle, but there's an avalanche within me, heavy and cold. That's the burning thoughts of contempt.
Yeah. Well said there, Rex. All right. Up next, we have Words by Elizabeth, and it goes like this. People lie when they tell you words don't hurt. They just mastered the art of disguise, sad inside, but performing smiles, and you're just not there yet. One day, someone will tell you that you might look pretty if you lost weight and put on some makeup, so you'll starve yourself until your heart almost stops pumping life throughout your veins, and you'll rack up credit card debt from cosmetic surgery that didn't make any damn difference whatsoever. One day, someone will tell you that you're just a waste of space, and you'll believe it, and you'll strive for their approval, not knowing that you'll never have it, because they've already settled on marking you with a red X. Failure. People lie. Words do hurt. If you let them, they can also tear you down and rebuild you into a sturdier tower. So the next time words try to trip you, you'll catch the fall. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Well, this kind of read on a personal level. And the fact is, people do lie. And words can hurt. And she ended on that note near the end. But if you let them, that's the idea. You spend so much reliance on trying to get people to like you, or at least pay attention, or whatever the thought may be. She gets it. You strive for their approval. You hit on that note. You should be striving on your own approval first, not someone else's. And that's what she gets to at the back end of this. They can also tear you down and rebuild you into a sturdier tower. So the next time words that try to trip you, you'll catch the fall. The idea is that learning from that which actually hurts in the moment, so it can be applied later, that you don't actually walk down that road once more. She does hit on that thought of credit card debt from cosmetic surgery. That didn't make any damn difference whatsoever. Yeah, got to be happy in your own skin before you start cutting it up for someone else's approval. How about you?
Well said there, Rex. I liked this. I thought it had strong thoughts on the idea of how, you know, words can hurt and they can tear you apart, but you can either use that to become a stronger you or let them cause you to fall and stay down. And you are right. It does, cosmetic surgery won't mean anything. Losing weight won't mean anything. None of the changes you make will make a difference if on the inside you still can't learn to love yourself. You know, and especially if you're doing things to please other people and to get other people's approval. I thought this was a great write all the way through, but I did particularly like that part about going into credit card debt from plastic surgery and the end with, so the next time words try to trip you, you'll catch the fall. So very well done.
All right. Where do we go next?
All right. Up next, we have Destroyed Days by Ilex Addis. And go ahead, Rex, and do better for us, please.
Destroyed Days by Ilex Addis. Sound waves echo, bouncing off the mountains in my skull in an overwhelming display of useless noise. Intermingling with the snow-covered landscape, frozen thoughts, rolling emotions, distractions, racing like hares, too fast for my mind to catch without a fox's luck. Destabilizing the terrain, I so lovingly pack to support my unstable bones until it all comes crashing down, leaving my inner broken heap under a partially stable facade, senses piling on top of each other without structure to cling to. Another in a series of destroyed days, shattered by another avalanche. End poem. What you got,
Great
Neil?
let's see here. I like the way this talks about, like, the mind bouncing around, and frozen thoughts, rolling emotions, distractions, racing like hares too fast for my mind to catch up without a fox's luck. I like that inner struggle between how the mind and the heart and the emotions are all over the place, and the sluggishness. Wonderful imagery and metaphors throughout. I really like destabilizing the terrain I so lovingly packed to support my unstable bones until it all comes crashing down, leaving my insides a broken heap under a partially stable facade. I thought that the partially stable facade was a nice thought on the whole idea of like barely keeping yourself together in front of people. So beautifully written and very well done.
Yep, I like the metaphorical tone in this, and that opening stanza, sound waves bouncing up the mountains in my skull in an overwhelming display of useless noise. The thought of the right side and the left side playing off against each other brainwise, and frozen thoughts, rolling emotions, fire and heat playing off each other, racing hares, too fast in my mind to catch without fox's luck. So there's angst. It could be mental deterioration, but somehow I'm going with the angst angle because it seems to be a nice tendency to run in the angle of arguing with oneself to the point of not actually getting anything done. And by the end of the episode itself, you've walked yourself into, God, I'm too tired to do anything at this point. And so you just kind of cave in the moment.
I like that.
All right, back to you.
All right. Up next, we have... One Fragile, the Other Has It All by Cassia F. And it goes like this. A breath taken, exhale comes slow. Notorious explodes abides. I climb the mountains to feel your heartbeat in my veins. The world in circles calculates the sunrise, the sunset. I held your hands to give you life when your own world fell apart. Smell of whiskey lingered in the air. Come sit by the fire, feel the warmth. Your coolness has never known. Every strike of my hand is to climb, each step growth, imagination, and knowledge entwined to understand the human mind. I had snowflakes, stars of snow, love on mountains grown. My body, spirit, and mind saw the beauty and silent serenity. So I climb, my hands frozen touch. The whiteness that has fallen, your mind has stolen the tranquility of beauty, destruction, rule. I do not understand why, but all the senses simply die. Hurricane, your anger, you come to swallow all with one strike. Bruised and abused with your spark, countless nights I sat by the fire just to feel the crackling of wood. My heart belonged to saving a soul. And yours, no heart at all, just mind, ruling to destroy it all. How different we are in mind and the beat of the heart. One wants to explore and hold every soul, yet another has a different plan. To hurry all, to bury all, and so the minds flow. A hummingbird and a hawk, one fragile as other has its whole. End poem.
Great read, Pam. It's a nice spiritual note to this, because it does hit on two sides of an equation, both the light and the dark, the fire and the cold, and the free and the bound. And it walks on the effort in trying to take that broken entity and nurse it back to health, but it really isn't working, because that one is bent on vengeance or destruction of self, or maybe both. Like the thought with the hummingbird and the hawk, the hummingbird blood is in the sunlight to feed and lives its life, while the hawk is busy perusing the skyline, looking for that which to take. One fragile as the other has it whole, and they both work as the essences to the hummingbird and hawk, or as the hummingbird is fragile, but it does have it as a whole, and the hawk has it as a whole, but then again, in this place, it's fragile, so the duality is nicely done. What about you?
Yeah, I liked the imagery throughout this, and I thought the comparison of two different birds at the end was a great one. I like the idea of the turmoil with this, the struggling of the tranquility, the anger that is swallowed down. It's a great ride all the way through, but I think for me it was definitely that second part that really just had some of the amazing strong lines and was very well done.
Well said. All right. Where do we go?
Up next we have Cascadia by Rich F. Oh, and go ahead.
Right.
Cascadia by Rich F. Crumbled rock thoughts reticent, embedded in my mind map mountain wall, crystallizing concrete contemplation, consciously accreting adorations, precipitous anticipations on high, waiting, waiting, merely waiting, 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 waiting for eternity. At last, emotions echo, at first a ripple barely heard above the din of silence, and then the vital signs, the dawn vexed violence, creates a tidal wave of extreme noise. The corvid cry, the eagles fly, and finally the brain rocks, the spirit shakes, soul stone stalling, staring into the unimaginable, unfathomable abyss. Lose their perfect precipice, poise, beyond the point of no return, ever falling. Eerie cries cascade down throughout these sable vortex valleys as comets plunge to earth and burn, raining on the unsuspecting, ill-prepared, unconscious creatures far, far below, slowly stirring to perfect inaction, forever frozen in space and time, too late scuttling scared, open mouth yet unaware, silent screaming no rhyme, no reason, forever freeze of lost humanity, winter dismal snapshot, long gone falling season, dragon fire extinguished. Tumbled rock thought sentiment, cascading, falling, falling, falling in this summer sky, and I, down below, sit and wait, wait, wait for consciousness to strike. And boom. All right, Pam, what do you got?
Well, first of all, I'm glad that Rich F. was inspired. He didn't enter the contest because he discovered it too late, but he was inspired and wrote, and so I really appreciated that. I like the sense of a kind of a personal, like to me gives the idea of a personal journey of enlightenment, how sometimes, you know, we have to be broken in order to discover our own self, our own strength. Wonderful use of imagery and of action words, falling, ever falling, cries cascade down through the stable Botox Valley as comets plunge to earth and burn. I really like the imagery in that. And I like how, I don't know, there's something about this that, you know, has a real depth to it, and the idea of always seeking a new level of consciousness. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Oh, I like that new level of consciousness. There is a note in that there's a crumbled rock thoughts reticent in that we're opening the line. And then waiting for eternity. Then at last, emotions echo. Because that whole thing kind of hits on the notion of waking up from a long sleep, so to speak. At first, a ripple barely heard above the dimmest silence. And then the vital signs, a tidal wave of extreme noise, the corvid cry, the eagles fly, corvid, the crows, and the eagles. And finally, the brain rocks, the spirit shakes, soul stones stalling, staring into the unimaginable, unfathomable abyss, losing their perfect precipice, poise, beyond the point of no return. Then the idea of falling is, you can't hold back that floodgate of thought. So you could walk this on the angle of the opening being lost in that that immobile state where you're stuck while you're writing, and all of a sudden things just snap in a moment. They come tumbling out, and back in this, and I down below sit and wait. Well, consciousness, the strike is there, that angle of where the brain is. You've got everything, but nothing fits in the moment. And you're waiting for the delivery system to actually give you the wherewithal to actually put all your thoughts to page.
I like that.
All right.
I like that.
We're coming back your way.
All right. Up next is Water Burial by Dirk and Auras, and it goes like this. I love to bury victims, send them off it. That way no one will ever know their murderer was me. There are no long nights of digging graves and going home to wash my shirt. It's so tidy out at sea, no mud or grass or dirt. The water runs along the body and washes off all my DNA. So there's no evidence that's left to show how I like to play. They are still 6 feet under, held by a cinder block and rusted chain clamped to the ankles of my entire stock. End poem.
Oh, yes. Oh, how the serial killer works. Hey, I like my garden beneath the waves or the glistening pond. I can go visit whenever I like, take a swim in their putridity. They still be lying there, facing up towards the sun, chained to those blocks. Ah, my garden beauties. I like this. What about you?
Yeah, it's clever. It's got great rhyme and flow. It definitely delves nicely into the mind of a serial killer, and also the arms. I like the attention to detail. Like, the water runs along the body and washes off all my DNA, so there's no evidence that's left to show how I like to play. And how I like to play was also a clever line in the idea of the way serial killers often play games with their victims. So, very well done. on will be our last of the carryovers, and then we'll go back to the Alfred Hitchcock. And it's I Choose Peace by Beautiful Disruption. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read.
I'll Choose Peace by Beautiful Disruption. I'm done saying I'm done. Now is the time to run. Running away from your explosive ways. It's over. I can't stay. Nothing left to see when looking into your eyes. All I know is you're high with the lies trying to hide. There's no truth in the pleads you speak. So caught up in a psychotic game that I won't play. Too damn old to be living like a boy. I'm too old for playing with toys. I finally made up my mind. Spent too long being blind. Unable to see the fact that you don't care. Just expecting me to be there. Only after control. Not anticipating for me to fold. I allowed myself to put up with your shit. While I'm throwing in the towel, I quit. That's a chance I'm willing to make. There's nothing more for you to take. You don't got my life, my heart, and my soul. I'll get it back, you just won't know. Not again will the chance be given to destroy what's left of me. Fuck your word, love, and I mean that wholeheartedly. Your answer for the destruction you've caused insists on violence. My solution for all the dysfunction is moving in silence. I won't feed your need to get a rise out of me, so no matter the circumstance, I'll choose peace. Would have never imagined this being the end of our love story, but then again, who would have thought that you would not choose me? End poem. What do you got, Pam?
I got that they choose peace. Is that enough? No, probably not. Okay. I like this idea of instead of staying and fighting, walking away from the negativity, walking away from the violence. You know, not saying, you know, I've had enough. I allowed myself to put up with your shit. Well, I'm throwing in the towel. I quit. That's a chance I'm willing to make. There's nothing more for you to take. You know, it's that whole idea of I'm not going to just stick around and keep, you know, trying to battle every day with you, with myself. It's got a strong voice in the idea of walking away. I wish I knew which prompt they were inspired by, but they didn't put that in their AN, so it's hard for me to tell. But, you know, it is a good emotive write and a strong message on just learning to love yourself enough to walk away. So very well done.
Nicely said. All right. That last line kind of offers up a different perspective. But then again, who would have thought that you would not choose me? And it puts the whole thing, I mean, the violence, the psychotic game, comes all back to all I know is you're high with the lies trying to hide. There's no choosing to plead. You speak so caught up in the psychotic game that I won't play. So that's the angle that she's drawn on to, and the disbelief in the drug angle being the one that's chosen instead of, that's where the dysfunction comes from. And the silence is, hey, you know what? I'd rather have silence and aloneness than the rancid display of whatever is being thrown about within this. Nicely done.
Absolutely. Well said there, Rex.
All right.
Where
are we?
All right. Up next, we have One Last Dance by Sidney Pierce, and it goes like this. Cutthroat crevices ooze, primordial jelly, dripping and coating fingers, sweet to taste, warm to the touch, ripe and ready for the lashing of tongues against perfectly smooth skin. Teeth gnash and gnaw, heavy breathing and stark passion gives way to sucking marrow like fine dining, licking fingertips clean, and kissing every inch of this meaty canvas. Hands tangle in straw-colored hair, pulling, pushing, thrusting their way through to crown a tender scalp. Fluid transfer freely between open mouths and wounds and poem.
Great read, Pam. Cavalry, good cavalry. Cleverly crafted in a dark what's cutthroat crevices, primordial jelly. You think teeth gnashing, or you think this was someone going in for the kill, but no, it's quite the touch to something. She took the prompt, film your murders like love scenes, and film your love scenes like murders. So this actually fit quite well. I wasn't expecting quite the thought rolling this way, but it works in its sensuality, damn.
Absolutely. Well, what I like is that it's a great duality in wordplay, and it did fit the prompt really well because each one of these lines can be taken as something sensual, and yet they can also be taken as a look at a murder scene, at the murder in process. So, you know, it's both simultaneously murder and lovemaking. And this is great all the way through. But to me, I particularly liked that second stanza with heavy breathing and stark passion gives way. Yeah, I really thought that line showed, the whole stanza, but particularly that line showed how the physical reactions of the adrenaline that comes from both, you know, committing or, you know, being murdered or you know, sensuality of lovemaking. And so just really quite a clever take and very well done.
Well, absolutely.
All right.
Where we go?
We have The Agony and the Ecstasy by Stelina. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read for us, please.
The Agony and the Ecstasy by Stelina. And Stelina took the same prompt. I love you to death. Seemingly an oxymoronic phrase. Yet, is not the pain of love akin to a beautiful demise? The same searing thirst to kill can also be quenched by the surrender of a lover, that sublime moment of total power. An object of affection pursued relentlessly as is a victim with strategy and ulterior design to fulfill that base need. The exhilaration of life riding beneath an ecstasy of fear is a paradisical potency within us all, is it not, of the victim, one who languishes and laments for the sight and sound of their obsession, the one who inflames their ardor so that they become oblivious to other joys. The agony of a divine death holds no resounding revelation, why it is but a welcome release from their binding chains. Therefore, in love and death, we are in parallel realms of persecution and paradise and oxymoronic existence. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. I thought this was a good write. I really liked an object of affection pursued relentlessly as is a victim with strategy and ulterior design to fulfill that base need. The exhilaration of a life rising beneath an ecstasy of fear. I like how she does the with each line. There's that side by side comparison. There are doors so that they become oblivious to other joys. The whole idea of being so focused on that one person, that one act, that there's nothing else that they have those like blinders on. Therefore, in love and death, we are parallel realms. I like that, and the whole idea that one person, when you know, walking in both love and death, or, you know, that offers up those ideas of that which walks side by side with each other. And it's basically just, you know, two sides of the same coin. So very well done.
Yep, I like that. That's why the oxymoronic phrase and the oxymoronic existence to finish was a nice touch, because she plays off it well with the sort of I love you to death, yet it's not the pain of love akin to beautiful demise. The same searing thirst to kill can also be quenched by the strength of a lover. That's the blind moment of total power. She plays off each of her, it's a single stanza, but each two lines works off the other. It's a backfill. It's kind of a yin and yang sort of, you can't have one with the other, and you've got to learn to play within that side of it, which is quite a clever thought to actually unfold. It kind of reads as an Alfred Hitchcock thought, to tell you the truth.
It does. It does, absolutely. And I like that you brought up that yin-yang idea of, you know, can't have one without the other. That was a great observation there. And up next we have A Step Too Far by Weaver of Dreams. And we have a SoundCloud for that one. So here we go.
I will take my revenge. There are none here can stop me. Like a wraith in the night, I hover. I'm sensed but unseen. From the height of my passion to the depths of despair, I run the gamut of high emotion and everything between. Can you sense my hatred? Does it seep into your dreams? I will destroy you and all you care about. Mark what I say. When you stepped on my heart, you killed all that we've been. I was thrown into a pit of despondency. Now someone will pay. I sold my soul to the devil, in return wanting only one thing, to see you lost, then I to sip your pain like a fine red wine. But you were born to be good, I see that now. Nothing I do can pierce your aura. You were never destined to be mine.
Great read, Weaver. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Pam, what you got?
Yeah, I really liked that. It was an excellent dark write. As always, she does a wonderful read. She's got a great voice for dark writes. And to me, I like how there's this whole message and tone of somebody who regrets how far they were willing to go. You know, there's a very, like, almost, like, the first-person narrative and the psychological darkness within it gives a very Edgar Allan Poe-type feel. Wonderful all the way through, but I do particularly like that second stanza. Can you sense my hatred? Does it seep into your dreams? I will destroy you and all you care about. Mark what I say. Such a, you know, a declaration of the hatred and vengeance, and really feeling like, you know, like the world would be a better place if only you could just tear this person apart. But I like how she takes that, the idea of just taking those thoughts of hatred and turning it into action and realizing that you're caught within your own, within hell. So very well done.
Well said, Pam. Thank you. Step Too Far had me thinking of One Step Beyond. It kind of reads that way. And revenge is sweet, but it should always be best served up cold, lest you dig two graves, one for the victim and one for yourself. But there is only one grave dug here, and that's hers itself. Reality kind of sinks in. It's got that that sense to almost witchery. I will take my, like a race in the night, I hover. I'm sensed, but unseen. And you sense my hatred to deep in your dreams. There's that almost invasion of witchcraft that wolfs into it. And also, off to that angle, but you were born to be good. I see that now. Nothing I do can pierce your aura. Again, the black magic isn't working on the ultimate goodness. So you were never destined to be mine. Is that that grave that is now hers to fall into, because nothing of what you did, revenge-wise, materially in the witch angle or anything else, has worked. All right, back to you.
All right, great comment there, Rex. Up next, we have Vertigo in Montego by Eric Svensson. And we also have a SoundCloud for that one. So here we go.
Vertigo in Montego. Eruditae expediency flashes. Sapphire blue eyedrops irrigate. Grimy, greasy, slimy cyclops eye cleanse. Pull acid effectiveness such a turn on. Lichen leeches and lepers dissolve. Green algae screams louder than Jim's butterflies. Sanitize, sterilize, numb the glum. Primordial fear, supersonic Mach 7 elixir. Immediate like razor blade cuts, crisscross slashes, release crimson gas. Cliff, precipice edge, bat blind cling for life. Upward air currents surge, riddles, griddles resolve. Cyclops eyes still grimy and greasy. Desperate measures needed. Jim's butterflies won't scream. Peekaboo luminous labs where stem cells lurk. Dolly the sheep stemmed from one of these. Greys lurk on the fringe. Binge on our primordial fear residue. Science fiction is now a double jeopardy fact. Kid you not, Sir Lancelot stumped his toe on a Cherubic's cube in Sherwood Forest. Mine old roomy old cyclops eye saw thousands of alien cubes landing on Earth decades ago. Cherubic's gut kick endowed Sir Lancelot. Extraterrestrial object infused him with enhanced abilities. All beloved blue-goon earth creatures enhanced. More and more secret glove compartments revealed. Hitch a ride on a cockfight. Abysmal plunge into final frontier fear factor. Hush, hush. Rather slush puppy dribble back into Socrates' darkened cave. Eruditae expediency drops, squirt sapphire blue eyedrops into grimy, greasy cyclops eye conglomerates. Pull acid effectiveness all-time high. Lichen leeches and lepers dissolve. Green algae hollers louder than Jim's butterflies. Full disclosure, sleight of hand, trick or treat mind. Of late, our blue-green earth shimmers like a disco ball from space. Hidden, Cherubic's alien cubes got kicked daily. Quantum field jitterbug jibes faster than Mach 7. Much faster and nastier than Hitchcock's birds. We're all alien hybrids. Quicksilver soon. Starship, mothership will zap us. Laptop in a space waltz of sticky chameleon tongues. Now don't be salt pillar petrified. Jonah survived his whale ride, didn't he? Too late to backtrack, buddy. We signed on for this assignment eons ago, didn't we? End poem.
Great read, Eric. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It's greatly appreciated. I like that little touch to Hitchcock to end with. Didn't he? This is quite the thought. There was one stanza in here that really kind of hit up. What was it? Cyclops eyes still grimy and greasy. Desperate measures needed. Jim's butterflies won't scream. Peekaboo luminous labs where stem cells lurk. Dolly the sheep stem from one of these. Days left on the cringe. Binge on our primary audio fear residue. Science fiction is now a double jeopardy stack. And he hit on the Cyclops eye conglomerate. Nice note to a singular thorn and bird's eye view to money. And that the angle here is maybe we've overstepped our boundaries in delving into things past what we should be digging into by rearranging atoms and bodies into something that they shouldn't be. And then that last note is what we signed up for, isn't it? This assignment eons ago. Life, yes. Not the turning point where we're creating something that was not meant to be in the first place. Nicely done. What about you, Pam?
Yeah, great observations there, Rex. I like this tribute to Alfred Hitchcock. I did think there was wonderful alliteration, great wordplay. I did like that he played with his name with the line "Hitch a ride on a cockfight," abysmal plunge into final frontier, fear factor, hush hush. I thought the abysmal plunge into final frontier, fear factor was a great line. That brought up the old game show that used to be around, like not old, but you know what I mean, the Fear Factor show, and really paid tribute to Alfred Hitchcock as one of the starting points for really delving into the idea of how fear can manipulate people. I really like grimy, greasy, slimy cyclops eye cleanse, pool acid effective, such as a turn on lich and leeches and leopard dissolves. I like that idea of the whole, like, to me, those lines really speak on that dissolving of reality. It just feels kind of very trippy-like. Just really some interesting imagery that kind of takes us beyond the earthly realm and into the sci-fi and the movies that were made in those time periods. So very well done.
Well said. All right, what are we getting into next?
All right. Up next, we have "Your Thoughts You Thought I Didn't Know" by Time Teller. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read.
"Thought You I Didn't Know" by Time Teller. And Time Teller took the prompt. "Revenge is sweet and not fattening. God, that feels good. So bloody good. I've run 1,000 miles to be at your side, traveled inside your footprint, and worn your shoes. And now you have cleared my selfish blues. For here I am, at your side, my loving, sweet, beautiful, doting bride. To be married tomorrow, start afresh, and forget all of our sorrows. God, it feels so bloody good, and the taste ain't bad. See, I saw you before I left to go and work with him. I know all about it, my little perp. And while I was away, that pussy came out and played. But now I'm back, and you're caught like a rat. I, that feels kind of sweet. I'll taste you later. Feel it? Feel it stinging into your spine? Nice little stab in the back should bring you down to your knees, you old hack. Now, feel it slipping out, followed by the wetness, the oozing of lust, leaking from the penetration. God, that is good, isn't it, dearie? Come on, give me full marks. At least I'm not dreary. And maybe I'll stab a bit here and there before I cut out your scheming, lustful tongue. Perhaps I'll twist and turn the blade. Shame you won't be here tomorrow. Our wedding day, you ran out with him, I will say, I suspect. Him already down in the cellar. I'll tell them all. You fucked off with him and his ball. Now, don't whimper or take it the wrong way. But you taste so sweet. We are now truly soured. That's the sweet and sour, babes. It's like takeaway. You always look after your figure. No need to worry about me getting fat. I'll leave the skin. Might make his feet color. Oh, babes, this feels so good. Such sweetness. To see their faces at the church when I tell them, you've gone. I hope my tummy doesn't rumble. Last one now, babe. Last long, slow incision. Oh, fuck it. I'm bored now. Stab, 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 stab. And bump.
Good lead rest. The excellent dark right. Extremely dark. You know, I like how he really takes us into the mind of somebody who's snapped and gone mad. I like the storyline of revenge after being cheated on, and the way that it combined the physicality of the darkness and the appetite and just the and there's a nice dark twisted humor here in lines like I hope my tummy doesn't rumble. I thought this had a nice pacing to it. You know, a really strong sense of just that anger and that the mind has just slipped away to a point of being unreasonable. So wonderfully written and very well done.
Well said, Pam. I got a lot of humor out of this because it kind of hits on that notion of, it's dark and it's riveting, but it hits on that notion of the dream of what they're already gone, you know, that you've caught them. And they buggered off, so to speak. So the thought comes out with what you really, really like to do if you get a hold of them. And it goes into nice detail of just taking it to the nth degree. Yeah, I'm going to gobble you up and just, hey, you know what, screw it. I'll just tell him you ran off with whoever it was, him and his balls. And what else? And then the back angle is, oh, babes, it feels so good, such sweetness. See their faces at the church when I tell them you've gone? Oh, I hope my tummy doesn't rumble. The rumble would be the fact that it's empty. He's hungry, and he hasn't eaten, even though he's deigned to offer up the thought of actually indulging in that angle, the sweet taste, the bitter sourness of those the flavors in that relationship. And the idea of last one now, babe. Last long spell intrusion, incision. Oh, fuck it. I'm bored now, Sam. I've gotten over it in the moment. Got to kill it all. Doesn't work for me anymore. All right.
Yeah.
Where are you going next?
All right. Up next, we have Stay Inside by Versus Goliath. And it goes like this. What was that? That creeping. Nothing there, certainly. Maybe an air vent leaking or a monster waiting. Time to check the tea whistling, walk past the old man whittling, his haunted deadened eyes stare forward like ghosts of his past. Water bubbles over, dances with fire, steams and hisses. Angry flames lick the side of the kettle, whisper curses. The dirty ceramic mug set uncomfortably on the table, slight, polite smirk given, shaky hands, pouring, boiling liquid, dribbling drops, smudge dust on the oak surface, creaking chair stops, those zombie eyes look up, still holding the knife, the whittler scrambles to his feet, stilted moments, movements, a marionette performing, strung up, leaking fluids from fingertips, skin gone, see the meat, skeletal figure, malnourished puppet grabs the cup, the way it guzzles the inhuman growl, slams it down. Body facing forward, skull turns to the side, slimy skinned ward, undead entity presides, more emanates not from its mouth, but those eyes, resonating within a hostage, done this for days, pours another full mug of genuinely hot water, being inhuman skin slides head back, the spine snaps sickeningly, several moments of silent observation. How long has it been like this? Tense, heated, dense, bated breath, seems like a dream or a nightmare. Puppeted wiggler downs another with drowning gulps, staring forward as he digests the hydrogenated oxygen like an alien processing the ability of his controlled person. Sensing fear, the stinking flesh walks sideways, over sniffs the pheromones, lifts his shoulders, sways head toward her, rotting pupils stare into the soul of the server, chattering teeth and an animalistic laugh, a sliced vocal cord incapable of resonation, almost like a pig squealing in a horrific bath, spidery grass with bloody hands, knocks kettle to floor, clanging as it lands, distracting the necrofiend. Hostage looks at the door, an abstract feeling freed, silent steps towards an unknown future. Sinking corpse inspects scalding hot kettle, sizzling flesh creeps up the kitchen. It's almost sad to see on the precipice of escaping, the creature cries as its skin attaches to the metal. Ignore it, ignore it. Walk outside and see. Decimation, destruction, neighbor's gut spread across the street, demonic creatures marching. Lucky not to be seen until screaming corpse puppet comes out howling. Thousand-eyed monstrosity swarm immediately. Imagine experiencing every molecule of your being being rendered to sausage instantly, infinity placed upon consciousness as pain spreads throughout every piece, fiber of being. Any last thoughts change to solely the overwhelming feeling of intense agony and panic. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. Now that that puppet thing that he was referring to had me thinking of that Vincent D'Onofrio character in Men in Black, I forget which one. He was the roach being in the meat suit. That was cleverly played out because of the wiggling angle, the skin caught on the hot teapot, and the kind of oddball movement that he writes into this. This comes out like a script, well played out, and he hits it. Well, he took the prompt, make the audience suck as much as possible, and walk that angle quite well, because that last three lines kind of hits on a great notion. Imagine that experiencing every molecule of your being rendered to sausage instantly. that hits on that right, the thought of what is crawling all over and eating you in the moment. Nicely done. Right, you got to read it.
All right. Yeah, I did. Yes, I did. And great comment there, Rex. I have to agree, this does have the feel of a script. It's like watching a movie. I thought he had a wonderful flow to this, really just strong, visceral imagery. Yeah, and I could totally picture what you were saying about the Men in Black, when the alien comes down and puts on the skin of that dead guy and walks in and demands sugar water. I could just totally picture that. You know, to me, this takes a lot of, you know, different elements of horror. You know, the idea of being a puppet to somebody, the idea of the invasion, the fear, the darkness within it. I particularly liked the attention to detail with spidery grass with bloody hands knocks kettle to floor clanging as it lands. So there's also not only wonderful use of imagery, but you can hear the clattering. You know, you can see the veins on the back of the hand. It all just really adds up to some really excellent detail in creating the scene in its entirety. So very well done. All right, up next we have Betrayal by Random Scribbler, and go ahead and give that a read, Rex.
Betrayal by Random Scribbler. He was two-timing her without any care with another one. The wife had a hunch that something was afoot, yet, ignoring her sixth sense, she gave him benefit of doubt. Shortly, he asked for dissolution of marriage. She pleaded and cried in vain. He was bent upon securing a permanent separation. She left his life, became his ex-wife, though he had to pay a hefty price. Still, he was happy. The other one became his wife. The other one soon became bored, asked for a divorce. He was so shocked, he begged and sobbed. She did not flinch. Taking the alimony, she left him. She fixed a rendezvous with someone. They met and they talked and they laughed out loud. The ex-wife said to the other one, terrific pact we had. Say, if there is true love, but if betrayed, leave for good, but not without avenging oneself. The other one said to the ex-wife, how superbly we fooled this man. We took his money and his love. We also gave him a taste of his own medicine. He cheated once. He got cheated twice. They clicked a selfie, then captioning it, devious sisters, they sent it to their dear ex-hubby. What you sow, you shall, so shall you reap. And such a wonderful thing, revenge is sweet, but not at all happening. And poem. Pam, what do you got?
I have to say that was quite clever. You know, it's always interesting to me where people really, really seem to like delving into the revenge rite. And I think that's in part because it's not something we're allowed to do in real life. Like, it's that I like that here we have another rite about revenge taken because, you know, somebody got cheated on. And you know, like, I think it's really fun to watch people delve into that realm of darkness and humor. And I like how this is a group of women. It kind of, like, makes you think of that movie, The Ex-Wife's Club, but obviously much darker. I like how she goes into describing each of the characters. The other one soon becoming bored, asked for a divorce. He was so shocked. He begged and sobbed. She did not flinch. Taking the alimony, she left him. I like, they clicked a selfie, then captioned it, "Devious Sisters." They sent it to their dear ex-husband. "What you sow, so shall you reap." What you get when you get three women angry, they just get together and form a little like witches club. And great take on the prompt and very well done.
Well said, Pam. I like the bite in this, the bait and switch, and the cheating was the angle in this, kind of like what I said about the MacGuffin in for the Hitchcock, but the cheating disappears because the reality was he got set up. These two played him double over. They met. She fixed the rendezvous with someone. They met. They talked and laughed out loud. The pact they had. So the thought that he was cheating in the first place must have been something that was simmering in the one. So that you decide, hey, I'll set him up with somebody to cheat from, and then we'll double down on the dose and take it twice to home. So I think the cheating angle actually comes from her because she made it happen. So that was pretty funny. And, yeah, and I did like that last line. Took that and dropped it in nicely, but not at all fattening. Nice. And humorous, too.
Absolutely.
All right. What's up next?
All right. Up next we have Being Who You Are by Julie Buck. And it goes like this. Some nerve getting me all comfy, like composed sunshine on a dismal day, to offer me the food of the gods, pizza with extra cheese, when you know a girl's best friend is diamond. But Domino's pizza is your bouquet to me, and that is you being the you you damn well please. As a pedestrian, I walk when your sign says no. You identify with following rules, and who the hell needs jewels? Not this rebel wench. I'll pee in any yard should I get a yen to just piss. I'll even do that when you know I prefer this. I want to walk on an escalator. You'll gladly stand. Maybe the relative point here is, fine, take your firm giraffe stance, suckle on simplicity. You'll never be a goddamn anagram. Your mind won't go that deep. And I, too, just can't stop being, because whoever the fuck I am. End poem.
Oh, another bited humor. I like this. Oh, I'd offer me food of the gods, pizza with extra cheese, when you know a girl's best friend is diamond. The Domino's pizza is your bouquet to me. Oh, geez. Yeah, there's a little download to the fact that, yeah, he likes to reach the beginning. And the thought, as a pedestrian, I walk on the sign and says no. If you have found another one with him. I'll even do that when you knew I prefer this. I walk on an escalator, you'll gladly stand. Boy, Dave, he's kind of sedentary and she wants to roam. Hey, take chances. I am who I am. There's Julie the sailor. We're all good. What about you?
Yep. Well, I thought that it was really clever. I liked the humor in it. I liked the idea of, you know, two people willing to be themselves, and this acceptance of each other, even, you know, with the idea that, you know, it'd be nice to have the jewelry, but you know me so damn well when you bring me that extra cheese pizza. I really like, I want to walk on an escalator. You'll gladly stand. The rebellious tone, and as a pedestrian, I walk when the sign says no. Clever lines, great humor, and very well done. Okie dokie. Let's see what we got next. All right. Execution of a Smile by Lord of Beads. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read.
Execution of a Smile by Lord of Beads. We look at love scenes correctly and see them as nervous scenes. The lovers are immersed in each other's small world till their connection with the big outside world is cut off. We look at the scene of a kiss with hatred and do not identify with the actress. We're not suffering from individual jealousy. We're not captivated by false religious teaching. Our role and our failure themselves. If we are positive, the murder scenes will turn into romantic scenes for us. Do you remember how easy we were to see the young, skinny Avengers execution scene? The show was free for us, but for the smiling actor who played his lead role at the cost of his life. He wasn't crazy. He didn't laugh at his destiny. Did he laugh that his enemies would not be happy? No, he laughed because his mother liked his smiling face. Yeah? Television and other media kill the truth like a weapon. The masters of cyberspace sit in the place of God and introduce the hero as a murderous thief and a corrupt judge as an honest man. And Lord Wentworth, please, film your murders like love scenes. And adventure sweet and not threatening. It seems like television is exactly like a gun. Your enjoyment of it is determined by which end of it you're on. What you get?
First of all, great read there. I like how this comes across as a movie scene, in a kind of noir type feel. If we are positive, mercy will turn into romantic scene trust. You remember how eager we were to see the young, skinny Avengers execution scene? The show was free for us, but for the smiling actor who played the lead role at the cost of his life. Great line there. I like the end. Yeah, television and other media kills the truth like a weapon. The masters of cyberspace set in the place of God. I like how it has that idea of how much reality is manipulated by social media or media of any kind. So just a really great write all the way through and very well done.
I like the title, Execution of a Smile, because it's Dane to actually make you smile because of the thought that comes with that ending stanza. The twist of reality that plays out, hey, well, we'll do this, and this, and we'll have to believe in this, that, and everything else. And don't go away happy. In reality, it doesn't work that way. It's supposed to be entertainment. on here. Kill the truth like a weapon. Master spy placed in the place of God and choose the hero as a murderous thief and a corrupt judge as an honest man. But that hits hard on a couple of notes because, you know what? Corruptibility is corruptibility no matter how and where you find it. And truth is, when you can't enjoy that which what you watch, which you go to see as entertainment at other venue to occupy that which takes you out of the existence that irks you so much at a given point where you need a little off-putting, something to take your mind away from what is going on instead of having it distilled in the entertainment that you're supposed to enjoy to begin with. Nicely done. Like that. All right.
Absolutely.
Where we go?
All right. Oops. Let me grab the next one. here we go. All right. Up next, we have Self Specialty Refers to Life Soul by Brunda Ban Panda. And it goes like this. My self-identity is said as life soul, since separation, reunion, my goal. Self is special word within society, self-love, self-satisfaction, self-belief. Self-sacrifice, opposite of selfishness, selfish greedy, surely to society spoils. Self-owns mate or enemy, Gita says, so control self to get the social praise. Prompt for placed in present contest. If I won't be myself, who will? Excellent. If I am not of myself, others can't help. I am life soul. I know value of self-help. Love self to great love of others and society. Self-hate hurts heart, so suicides commit. Self-consciousness and self-satisfaction. Self-love, peace, soul, aim. Sign Quanon poem.
Great read, Pam. Very much. I like this. He waits to drop in that thought through the prompt he took right in the middle of the piece itself to drop the sort of self-reliance and the fact of honoring oneself. As who and what you are and who is what you were created as instead of trying to get it from society. Society will come to you once you find yourself as who you are supposed to be. So there's a nice spiritual note, information to actually living as you instead of someone else. Well, that was just a prop anyway, but it's living in your own eyes before you live in someone else's. About you.
Yeah, I thought this had a nice alliteration, a wonderful message on the idea of learning to love and accept yourself, but not be so focused on yourself becomes that idea of being selfish to others' needs. So wonderfully written couplets, a nice spiritual tone to it, and very well done.
All right, where are we going now?
All right, up next we have The Mean Bard by Peter Solway, and go ahead, Rex.
This already sounds like it might be funny. The Mean Bard by Peter Solway. Stage littered with reclining forms, murderous to stab blunt pewter that bends, audience of victims still pleading, more realism, refund, booing, lack of action. The mean bard of thought, to suspend disbelief to an existential naught, suggests slow process of decomposition, crack of York, somewhat sunk, winter white. Talking suicides, dry drownings, witches with advanced syphilis yoke cracking, boys with wigs to imagine, foul old cooking women, goyas, crones, to scoff at all mortal exits chosen, woven, blowing smoke of fate behind. Stage of hypothetical fact, much discussed. No future balm psalm, illusion Persian mat, a battle scene upon board, so clean. But feast of violent bloodletting, death resultant, piss and shit varnish, not a drop of ketchup spilt. Amputated limbs thrown at audience, severed heads bereft to dust. Lad with voices high-pitched, lady of witches to preach incantation, prince of next week's productions, Ophelia botanical with garden, gargle, suffocation. All suggestion needing concentration, missing a line, plot gone, all a task to imagine, work the mind over time, not a rapid stream to flood the globe, nor modern gore of overload confirmed. Thumbs down at the Colosseum, Romans and countrymen, keen as profiles, stamped on coins, would be so dispassified with a bard so mean. Jump to modern epoch, demanding explicit Hollywood product, yelling, bring on the Christians and crocodiles, lions to rape the vessel virgins, nubile and menstrual and naked. Oh, pray script be damned, real audience not queuing for pretend, thus the excessive, in your face, spell it out, machine, now, fashion. Fountain pen in mother's mouth, symbolism obvious, train into Auschwitz, welcomed into a crystal night. Pretty diamond actress, to make a lame man itch, audience think, body in the closet, find the stiff. The ditch his binoculars, zoom in tight, now porn's mature delight, plan Dr. Tolt's anatomy lesson, really a woman under sheet, lifting her arm, surgeon creeps to go in. Catch a bloodstream branch, scream release, smashed on cracked logs, sharp stones, ruptured course, bruised red communist, exposed all the way down, lingering close-up at final crime scene dust, detective cunt pissing, licking the butt. No polite bard retired to country squire living, wife and bath still nagging, those stupid plays you wrote, like Midsummer's Murders, all pretend, Mother Goose more convincing in her candlelit room of Tudor steam. That famous scene, daily news of phallic beating, ink of penis dripping, curtain to rip, imagine nude descend, plug hole bend into enameled slippery depth of compromised abstraction slip. Brett to take up the baton, gallery run with bone effect and Wendy's bum. Alfred ecstatic shouts cut. Not a tit or wound in sight to dilute imagined milk and print, hit the arctic nerve, the northern lights all night. Mother in the attic dark, swinging back and forth, sex to purely suggest, sun confess, dust off cobwebs, withered bejeweled, withered bejeweled be breasts, shadows of switched on lamp to overlap and arc. Gestapo happy with taboo ending, mean bard making us dig deeper than hands in them. See ourselves with skull and shovel, a train to break and couple our lives of sharp regret. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. I like how he takes this on a level of taking a look at Shakespeare, but also a look at modern day horror. And I like the art references, as always, the reference to Goya's crones, to scoff at all mortal exits chosen, woven, blowing smoke of fate behind. Wonderful imagery, just strong and visceral. I also really like Prince of Next Week's production, Ophelia Botanical with Gargle Suffocation. To me there's that element of horror that is the psychological, the kind of the manipulation of a son by a mother, and it just kind of feels like a mind that's gone mad. And so excellent writing, really well done.
Oh, all right. This I based this on Brett Whitney's series of paintings on the Christie murders in London. John Reginald Christie was a serial killer, a supposed necrophile. So I have to check out those paintings. They sound like they might be interesting, considering he drew on them to play this abject scenery out with a nice touch to Alfie with the thoughts of how the light scene works and where the play is going and all that. So, oh, here we go. Hitchcock, The Ditches, Binoculars, Zoom in Tight, Now Porn's Mature the Light, and Dr. Tope, Anatomy Lesson, Really a Woman Under a Sheet, to think the wrong surgeon creep to go in. Plus the fact that he hit on the thought of a serial killer as his motif was pretty cool, and I definitely want to see these paintings. So thank you for the angle drawn on, Peter. I got to check this out. Boy, that was, you might have warned me, that was a healthy piece. I could have had something to drink first.
Well, I'm sorry, what was that?
I said you might have warned me, I would have had something to drink before I started that.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. All right, where are we going? How are we doing? We got how many left?
We've got two left to get through.
Oh, damn.
Can you hear me all right?
Yep, but you crackle here and there.
Oh, okay. Okay. Up next, well, it must be a studio thing because you're crackling here and there too. So, yeah, I don't know what to say there. So, all right. And up next, we have Not Cinderella, and it goes like this. Cinderella was a little bitch who made a big deal out of everything. She made us seem like we were jerks, but she was the one always complaining. Cinderella never wanted to sweep the floors, so stepmother spanked her with the broom, but she just bit her lip and let it happen, so Anastasia had to sweep from then on. Cinderella never wanted to feed the dog and cat, so stepmother threatened to never feed her. But I guess she was fine trying to bite people, so Drusilla had to feed them all from then on. Cinderella never wanted to wash the laundry, so stepmother said she wouldn't have any clothes, but she just smiled and stripped off her old dress, so stepmother had to wash from then on. Cinderella paraded around with us, the mice, and she spoke to us as if we were incompetent. She made us fix her dress by ourselves, and my friend Perla got poked in the arm. Later, when the prince came, we all thought he'd take her home happy, but he realized how much of a bitch she was and took her to the coach and got rid of her. End poem.
Oh, another funny piece. I forgot I picked this quote. If I made Cinderella, the audience would immediately be looking for a body in the coach. Or did Avery take this and twist it in a hell of a direction? But she also hits on another quote, the one about blondes, and Cinderella is a blonde. Oh, yeah, she shows up nicely being a virgin as snow because she shows up bloody footy. The bloody footprints end up being hers. And I like the fact that she takes this Cinderella and turned her into the bitch instead of the stepmother and the three daughters, or the two daughters, or the, and the, her daughters, and Cinderella being the one as the maid underfoot. This was drawn nicely with a nice tongue-in-cheek bit of humor with it, which was really cool. What about you?
Yeah, I did like this. I thought it was a great twisted version of Cinderella, another point of view. I enjoyed the humor in it. I thought it was just, like I said, it's delightfully twisted. I like that the story is told from the mouse's point of view. And so definitely a very clever and fun write, and very well done.
All right. Well, I didn't think we'd actually get all 22, but okay. What's the last one?
The last one for the night is From a Frenzied Bird Heart by Jim Bellamy. And go ahead and give that a read.
From a Frenzied Bird Heart by Jim Bellamy. There are evil covers upon my bed. Oh, there are petrol fingers inside my head. And la, when we toast bread, we will surely have to find the pigeon dead. And lambed as men move, I as may well shrink across rose beds. Oh, there are detox fingers inside God's head. And la, as we cut breasts, then lambage, surely now a honeyer of lead dead cars will appear on a peppermint shore. And I will see the dead as they come live. And I will read in bed as sleepy statues course heads to rich sweet lies from scabby media slander libel lies. Eager guns of a mad sun appear, washing across dirtiers of lost wives. Oh, easterly arising cross suns get crashing way up high inside knives. And oated, impassioned berries get fed to cherry daisies, and eyes must get crisscrossed across ferries. Oh, eastern Christmas chapels will come rocking duffies as closing skies come coupling cats with sweet Mary. There are pullers of bell ropes here that form corners through dad dives. And ooh, I have learned of ropes. And ooh, I have danced for popes. And when dogs drive, then a caterwaul of scores will come shooting up, up. Oh, lives get crisscrossing the doorbells. And where once Daffy Dell thrilled, then a shaper of Mars dies entirely out and far away.
Great read there, Remy.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I like the nod towards the birds with the title. I thought that was clever. Wonderful lines here. Then Lemire, surely now a honeyer of lead dead cars will appear on a peppermint shore, and I will see the dead as they come alive, and I will read in bed as sleepy statues cause sweet lies from a scabby media slander libel lot. Just some really hard-hitting lines in the way that, media shifts point of view. I like the imagery within the eager guns of a mad sun appearing, washing across girders of lost wives. And there are pullers of bell ropes here that form fawners to dad dives. And, oh, I have learned of ropes. It's that whole idea of the games that people play. So excellent write and very well done.
Well, Jim said the film your love scenes like murders and your murders like love scenes. So he went deep in the little touch of abstract. There are evil covers upon my bed. Oh, there are petrol fingers inside my head. And ah, when we toast bread, we will surely have to find the pigeon dead. I like that word. And land as men move, eyes may well shrink across red bed. Oh, there are deep thoughts in me inside God's head. Ah, it's my breath. And land is surely now a honey of red dead cars will appear on a second floor. I will see the dead and take my life. He dug deep and hard into this. I got a touch of, of course, brought to Shakespeare with this play, and I have learned the rope. I have danced with hope. And there are when dogs dive and a caterwaul scores from sweeping up. Oh, lives that crisscross in the dog hills, where once daffodil fills, when the shaker of Mars dies entirely out and far away. I'm not still a couple of reads on this to dig out all the doctrine that runs within this. Because it does hit on the play, but death runs well. I got to dig into the heart for the a lot of animals that he, I know he's got a playing in here, but it's rock hard for the eye inside nine. Captain Coupland cast his sweet Mary. Well, that's a strange little twist right there. Well done, Jeremy. I'm Jeremy. Jim, thank you very much. All right.
Absolutely. Well, great show tonight, Rex.
Yeah.
Go ahead and wrap it up.
You are already bargaining up. We're going to have leftovers.
What was that?
I said I didn't think we'd get through 22, and you were already bargaining up. Yeah, we're going to have leftovers.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I guess, you know, that's what happens when the comments are short and sweet. So, yeah. Yeah, I was kind of surprised, too. But, yeah, it happened. All right. Do you want to mention your contest you have running for your Sunday show?
Digging into the lyrics of Don't Fear the Reaper. There's a backstory to that. That's really good. But for the whole, just to dig into the lyrics, then give us what your thoughts and what they play across your mind. What about our Twisted Tuesday today, since that's your end?
Well, for tonight's Twisted Tuesday, I ran a contest with the artwork of Jeff Soto, which is pop art surrealism, which is actually it's pretty cool, funky stuff. The contest is closed, but of course, you know, on-topic rights are still welcome on the topic board. And, you know, readers and commenters are always welcome. And as far as other contests go, for next week, I have a contest running for After Midnight for quotes by Niccolo Machiavelli.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So plenty of room in that. And I also have an Art of Seduction contest running, and that's not for this week, it's for next week, yeah.
Okay, there's Gene's Club this week with that
yep.
That black and white, well, not black and white, amber motif pick.
Right, right. It actually goes with a specific line from the, she has two prompts. She has the painting, and then she has a Pablo Neruda poem. And you can be inspired by one or the other or both.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, I am tired, and I am going to bed. So have a good night. Great show.
All right. Good night, and we'll do this again next week. Same time, same bat channel. Good night, gang.